Okay, so this is Bio 160, and it's Tuesday, October 7th. You had a test last time, and so I graded those and put the results on Blackboard. You have only your two tests in Blackboard. I haven't put your quizzes in there, but at least you can see the average that you have on your tests. And I hope maybe over the weekend I can get all your quizzes into Blackboard. Then you'll know exactly where you stand in class, and I might bring a spreadsheet in as well. So there are a lot of really good grades on the test, and then there are a lot of really not so good grades. So congratulations if you found yourself in the group that got really good grades. I think there are even a couple hundreds on the test. So I know it's possible to do good. And so I want to show you where you can get the handouts for class. All right, so I only had a couple left over from last semester that I passed out, but last semester we used a different textbook, so the exam figures are not the same. The ones that are online are the correct exam figure numbers, so make sure you get the correct exam figure numbers. Those are on your syllabus, or you can get them online. Everything else should be pretty much the same on there, yeah. Okay, so where do you find these things? Along with your grades. Well, you need what? You need an internet browser, right? Like Internet Explorer or Firefox or something. So open up an internet browser. Oh, good, we have one. It's opening. It might open. Did I tell you guys how much memory my computer had in my office? It was so slow. When you go buy a computer these days, you get, what, 1 gigabyte or 2 gigabytes of RAM, maybe 4 gigabytes are really kind of like the current model. My computer had 128 megabytes. That was a quarter of a gig. I couldn't believe it. But I think the college is going to splurge and actually get me some RAM. All right, so where you want to go is Blackboard. All right, and that is what? Just cypresscollege.blackboard.com. I'm pretty sure that's in your syllabus. There's a link in your syllabus. Do you have a hard copy of it? Notice it's not www. Then you have to log in. How do you log into this beast? Your username is your student ID number. Which starts with that little silly symbol right there, right? So you got to put that in there, otherwise I won't know. All right, so then here is just an example of one right here. And then probably you could click, but tab works too. All right, and then your password probably is just the one you use in WebStar. But if that doesn't work, then you got to contact me and I'll change it for you. And then you can go in later and change it to the one that you want. All right, so that is working. Sweet. All right, so here is all the classes I'm taking this semester, and your class is in here. Ah, here it is, right here. All right, so I don't know how many classes you are enrolled in that have a Blackboard site. I'm not really sure. You might have 2 or 3. You might have only this one. So just click on this one here, and this takes you pretty much to the home page. And to find your grades, you would hit Tools. And since I don't have any grades, I probably don't have a grades button. But over here, there's going to be a grade, my grades. So click on my grades and you'll see your grades. I don't have grades, so if I click on that, it's going to say, you know, take a hike or something. So I won't do that. So let's see. Course documents are where you're going to find the lecture notes. And these are the chapters that are going to be on the next test, 8, 9, and 10. And so you can click on this to open it up. All right, it's just going to be, you see it's a big file with a .doc right here. What does that mean? It's a Microsoft Word document. So these are the lecture notes. Now what I've done in here is not just give you the lecture notes, I've also pasted the exam figures. So here are the actual exam figures that you have to know for exam 3. But I've pasted the exam figures in here. But, now is this nasty what I did, or is this a good thing? I erased the labels on you. So that means that you can practice labeling it. So what is this? This is like exactly what you're going to see on the test. So here is a way that you can, if you practice these, I'm sure if you do it 10 times, you'll get 100% on the exam figures on the test. You might only have to do it 5 times. I'm not sure. Okay, maybe some of you only 2 or 3 times, but I would guess if you do it 10 times, each one of these, you're going to be doing really well in the class. All right, so for every chapter, I have these exam figures. So I'm just going to backtrack once. It saw me backtrack again. All right, so it's under what? Course documents, and I sent an email to everybody. Now, if you want to, if you don't want to go to Blackboard every time that you want to look at these document right here, what you can do, all right, when I opened it in Blackboard, I used a right-hand mouse button. That's the usual mouse button that you click to execute a link. But if you want to save it automatically on your computer so you don't have to download it again and again and again, it's going to be automatically on your computer, use the right-hand mouse button, okay, instead of the left-hand mouse button. So if you use the right-hand one is not the one you usually use. So put the cursor over that link, use the right-hand mouse button, and it's going to say open a new window, or save target as. Save target as. Save target as, and then it's going to ask you, well, where do you want to put it? You can put it in a folder, or you can put it in My Documents, or put it on your desktop, and then you don't have to have internet connection every time you want to look at that document. So it will just automatically download it for you. That's if you right-click. Oh, you want to listen to the lectures again?
Yeah, that's what I want to know.
Okay, let's see if we can find that out. All right, I think I have an announcement. Okay, for instance, if you want to listen to the lectures, this is the very first page you come to, and there are announcements here. The very first announcement that I sent you was the link for the audio files. So it's what, sem.cypresscollege.edu, and then this is for every instructor's name right here. So if an instructor has a web page at Cypress College, it's going to follow the same kind of format. So just click on this link, and here are all the lectures that we've had so far. There is an audio file, and then there is a corresponding text file, and that's there for somebody that has a hearing deficit, because we all don't hear the same. Right, so if you want to read the lecture or if you want to listen to the lecture, and again, if you just click on it, it will open up Real Player or Windows Media Player or some kind of plug-in for audio files, and you can listen to it. Or if you want to download it to your computer, again, right-click, Save Target As. So if I want to save that file, Save Target As, and then you get to choose what folder you want to put it in or on the desktop, and then you can play it over and over and over again. And then once it's in your computer, you can drag and drop it to MP3 player, or if you have iTunes, you have to get it into iTunes first to put it into your iPod, but usually it's pretty easy to do. And then if you want to read, you can read the transcript, but this transcript is from a previous semester. It's not the same lecture that I gave. The content is the same, but the dates are different for exams, for instance, because I think this came from a spring semester, last semester or something. Okay? So if you want to see how to mouse around after class, let me know, because I don't know if you can see what I did here just by looking at it one time. All right, but what do I think is the coolest thing? Those figures at the end of the chapter notes that you can practice labeling, right? If you're motivated to do that, you can just clean up on that part of the test, okay? All right, so I'm going to mute. That's the audio. How do I mute the video? I guess I'll just turn it off. Okay. But I can turn it back on real easy. All right. Let's see. So what else do I have to say? I don't think much of anything else. So if this projector works, we're going to move on to the next chapter, which is muscle system. And even if the projector doesn't work, all right. Flip it up. Okay, so does anybody else have questions? Did I do that too fast on the computer? I'll show you after class if you want to see it again. All right, so muscle system. I'm going to have to do something to raise it up a little bit. close. All right, so the muscular system. What's the function of skeletal muscle? As a matter of fact, it's a kind of tissue. How many different tissues do you have in your body? You got four. What are they? You got muscle, yeah, because that's what we're going to talk about today. What else? Epithelium, nervous tissue, and then connective tissue. That's right, those are the four kinds of tissue. All right, so we just got done with bones. What kind of tissue is bone? It's a kind of connective tissue, right. All right, so now we're on to a whole new different kind of tissue, and that is muscle. All right, and in particular, we're going to mostly talk about skeletal muscle today. And what's the what is skeletal muscle specialized to do? To contract, right? It shortens, but it is specialized to contract. So muscle can pull on things and pull them closer together, but it can't really push on something, right? It can't expand with power or energy to push bones. It can only do what? It can only pull bones together when it contracts. So one of the functions of skeletal muscle is for movement. Pulling bones together, making bones articulate up against each other. Motion, like walking, running. All right? Another kind of function for muscle is posture. Like right now, you're not really moving. You're kind of sitting in your chairs, sitting upright, your head is upright. You're not moving, but you're still contracting many muscles in your body because what would happen to you if all of a sudden all the muscles in your body relaxed? For instance, if you were to faint and all your muscles relaxed, what would happen? Well, you'd fall, right? First your head would hit the table and bounce off, and then it would hit the chair and bounce off, and then your head would hit the floor, right? So even though you're not moving, skeletal muscle is very important just to maintain posture in your body, right? So you don't hurt yourself. Another important function is heat production. What can you tell me about your body temperature? Do you know anything about your body temperature? It's kind of special. Why is it special? Is it ever the same temperature that the air is?
No.
Very rarely. You wouldn't like that very much because what would be the temperature of the air if it was the same as your body? It'd be 98, yeah, it'd be really hot. It would be 98.6. A lot of people would be really comfortable, right? So your body works at that temperature the best. If your temperature is higher or lower, that's a disease process called hyperthermia. Or if it's lower than that, that's hypothermia. So your muscles help produce body heat. Because right now, the room temperature is pretty low. You need to generate heat so that you can stay at your normal body temperature, which is 98. Because it's probably only 70-something degrees in here. The other important thing about skeletal muscle is that it stabilizes joints. And joints only have certain kinds of motions, like your elbow is what we call a hinge joint. Right? It shouldn't really rotate. It shouldn't adduct or abduct at the elbow right here. If it does, it will damage that joint. So muscles protect the structure of joints. As a matter of fact, if you ever do damage a joint, unfortunately, the only way really to build that joint up back to its original strength is to actually build the strength of the muscles on either side of the joint or the muscles that work across that joint will help stabilize it. So these are some important functions of skeletal muscle. All right, let's talk about some structure, muscle structure. So that was, first slide was physiology. This slide is now, we're going to look at some anatomy of muscle. And in your book, you have a pretty good picture of skeletal muscle. So I'm just going to describe that picture to you. And we're going to talk about all the things on this slide. So there is a nice picture of a muscle, all right? And the muscle cells themselves are muscle tissue, but when we look at a muscle right here, we also see a nerve, which is made out of nervous tissue. We see blood. What kind of tissue is blood? It's a connective tissue as well, right? And then there is connective tissue within the muscle itself, right? We'll name some of these different layers of connective tissue. So when we look at a whole muscle, for instance, maybe this is a muscle in your thigh. We're going to look at some muscles in the thigh. But you're probably familiar with a muscle that's in your arm, like the biceps brachii. The biceps brachii is not just muscle tissue. It's what? It's muscle tissue plus nerve plus connective tissue. So a muscle like the biceps brachii is really, what do we call something that is composed of many different kinds of tissues? An organ, right? So this muscle like the biceps brachii would be an organ because it's made up of all these different kinds of tissues. As a matter of fact, this tendon, can anybody remember what kind of tissue makes up a tendon? It's a kind of connective tissue that's called dense connective tissue. Dense connective tissue that has a lot of collagen in it. Right? So a muscle is really an organ because it's made up of different kinds of tissues. Well, when we start to look at something that's kind of complicated like an organ, we like to do what? Break it down into smaller pieces. That's always a good approach, right? Look at the building blocks for this organ. So what are some of the building blocks? Well, you have a tendon. A tendon connects the bone to the muscle. So when this muscle contracts, it can actually pull on this bone right here via this tendon. So that's one of the building blocks. All right. Then surrounding the outside of a muscle is a connective tissue we call fascia. That's covering the whole muscle. And just underneath the fascia, there's another connective tissue layer we call the epimysium. So anytime you see this mesium, guess what kind of thing you should be thinking of? Just like when you hear osteo, what should you be thinking of? Osteo is bone. Okay, and mesium really means, stands for muscle. And epi, what does epi mean? On top of, right? So that's the connective tissue on top of the whole muscle or the whole muscle organ surrounding everything. And if we look on the inside, can you see these different compartments right here? Okay, that's what we call a muscle bundle. And other books call these things fascicles. So fascicles or muscle bundles are the same thing. And they're surrounded by connective tissue. That connective tissue is called the perimysium. All right, so there's perimysium surrounding every fascicle. And it's the epimysium, what, that surrounds the whole muscle. But a fascicle is just surrounded by the perimysium. So let's pull out one of these fascicles right here. So we're going to pull it out and look at a fascicle right here. There are, what, there's things inside of a fascicle too. And each one of these things is actually a muscle cell. And sometimes we call a muscle cell a muscle fiber because a muscle fiber is really long and narrow. It kind of looks like a thread or a fiber, for instance. And there is another connective tissue sheath around every single fiber, and we call that the endomysium. All right, so each one of these things are a cell or a fiber, and if we pull that out and take a look at it, we see that the surrounding of every cell is what we call the endomysium right here. So we got epimysium around the whole muscle organ, the perimysium around every fascicle, and the endomysium around every muscle cell or what we call a fiber. Right. Well, here's a fiber right here, or a cell. And if we look inside that cell, what do we see? Even more stuff, right? More structure, a lot more structures. We see these big tubular, like organelles, that run the whole length of the fiber. And these things are what we call myofibrils. Stay with me because we're going to describe how muscles contract by looking at what's inside a myofibril right here. And you can see that there's a pattern inside the myofibril. As we go along the longitudinal direction of this fiber, there's a repeating unit from here to here, and from here to here, and here to here, and here to here, right? And from here to here, all the way from one end of the muscle fiber to the other. All right, so that's real important when we look at a muscle cell or a muscle underneath the microscope. Plus, see these dark lines right here? Notice that all these dark lines line up from one myofibril to the another on top of it. They all just line up in a nice line. And then the others over here are going to look the same, okay, all the way through the muscle. All right, we're almost down to the very basic parts. All right, so here's a cell. What are these things inside of a muscle cell? These are myofibrils. All right, so here's a myofibril. And if we look inside a myofibril, we see more things that look like fibers. And these are the smallest structures, so here's where we're going to sort of end our discussion of the building blocks of a muscle. These are what we call filaments or myofilaments. And there are two kinds of, can you see there's two kinds of myofilaments right here? There's one that's thick, and then there's one that is, how would you describe the shape of this other one right here? This is a thin one, right? So we got thick filaments and thin filaments that make up myofibrils. And we're going to learn what the names of these things are. The thick one is called myosin. Oh, what does myo mean again? Muscle, right? And then the thin one is what we call actin. So there are two kinds of myofilaments. There's myosin, which is thick, and there's actin, which is the thin one right here. Okay, so do you think we can now go back the other way? If we wanted to build a muscle, what would we start with? We would start with filaments, myofilaments, like actin and myosin, put them together to make a myofibril. And a myofibril is, you could consider this, what, an organelle. It's inside of a cell. It's an organelle specialized for contraction. And if we put a bunch of myofibrils together, we get a muscle fiber. And if we put a bunch of muscle fibers together, like we see right here, we get a fascicle. So here's one fascicle. And if we put a bunch of fascicles together, we get a muscle. So that's a hierarchical structure of muscle. All right, so you might want to be able to go back and forth from the large organ all the way down to the myofilaments, or start at myofilaments and actually construct a muscle organ by putting all those different pieces together. Okay. All right, so let me see my cheat sheet right here. And did I get everything? Sure, the fascia, the muscle bundle. What's another name for bundle? Fascicle. Fascicles are made up of muscle fibers. What's another name for a muscle fiber? A muscle cell. Okay, well, it says right there, muscle fiber is a muscle cell. Now, a cell is, can you see a cell with your naked eye?
No,
because they're microscopic, right? Cells are microscopic structures. You need a microscope to see them. But a muscle cell is very long, might be about, could be as long as a meter, which is really long. Don't need a microscope to see something that's a meter long, but a muscle cell is still small in its diameter. It may be long, but it's so small you still can't see it. So how is it that a muscle cell can go from, for instance, almost one end of the muscle organ all the way to the other end of the muscle organ? Well, each muscle fiber at one time was thousands of individual muscle cells that fused together to form this big long tube. Okay, so that's why it is very, very long. It's macroscopically long. You would be able to see it with your naked eye if it had a big enough diameter. So it was made up originally of thousands of cells. So guess what happened to the nuclei of all those thousands of cells? They never disappeared. They're still in this muscle fiber right here. So that's why a muscle fiber is what we call multinucleate. It has many nuclei because the muscle fiber comes from what? It's the accumulation of thousands of muscle cells that have joined together during development to make this big structure right here. Here is just an example of one nucleus. But every muscle fiber has many, many, many nuclei. Oh, here's something I didn't talk about. It has an extensive endoplasmic reticulum. Can you remember what endoplasmic reticulum is? It's an organelle inside the cell. Can you remember what the function of endoplasmic reticulum? Oh, how many different kinds of endoplasmic reticulum do you know of? Yeah, there's rough and smooth. The rough is responsible for protein synthesis. And the smooth, I don't think I mentioned why it's important in muscle, but the smooth is important not for protein synthesis, but for lipid synthesis. I don't know if that's ringing a bell, lipid synthesis. But there's another important function in skeletal muscle. Here we see endoplasmic reticulum in this yellow color right here. And it's smooth, so it's not for protein synthesis. In skeletal muscle, it's a reservoir for a calcium ion. So there are millions of calcium ions inside the smooth endoplasmic reticulum. And in muscle, we call the smooth endoplasmic reticulum sarcoplasmic reticulum. And you'll see why we call it sarcoplasmic reticulum in just a second. And so what's the job of the sarcoplasmic reticulum? It stores something. It stores calcium. All right, that's an ion. It's a bivalent cation. And we're going to see that calcium is used as a signal that can start muscle contraction. Okay, so you see that sarcoplasmic reticulum, and it kind of looks like what? A network that completely surrounds, actually it's going to surround each one of these myofibrils as well, okay, and the whole muscle fiber. All right, the myofibril, highly ordered unit. Oh, okay. See these lines right here? One here and one here. They're kind of like dark blue lines. The structure from one dark blue line to the next is what we call a sarcomere. And the sarcomere is the structural and functional unit of muscle contraction. So if we understand how a sarcomere contracts, or how these dark lines are pulled together when a muscle contracts, you're going to know everything about how skeletal muscle works. So we're going to focus some attention between these two lines right here. So here is a sarcomere. All right, so anytime you see this sarco, guess again what you should be thinking of. You should be thinking of a muscle cell. All right, so the cell membrane around a muscle cell is what we call the sarcolemma. Instead of plasma membrane, we call that the sarcolemma. The endoplasmic reticulum, we call sarcoplasmic reticulum. And this unit of contraction inside of a myofibril is what we call a sarcomere. So when you hear that term sarco, you should think of a muscle cell. Okay. So that means now we can get down to a little bit better level right here. So here's a pretty good slide that's in your book. This just shows the whole muscle fiber. Okay, and what's the building block of a muscle fiber again? What are all these units right here? These are what we call myofibrils. Yep, myofibrils. And surrounding every myofibril is what? This sarcoplasmic reticulum. What is this storing again? Sarcoplasmic reticulum stores calcium. Where else do you have calcium in your body? Bones. Makes bones strong, right? But here you're going to see that we need calcium for muscle contraction. So now let's look inside this myofibril. And don't forget, the myofibril is made up of thick filaments, which are called myosin. And these thin ones are called actin. And notice that they interdigitate each other, right? They slip between each other, like if you put your fingers together. So those are the two kinds of filaments. And this zigzag line right here and right here, this defines the segment that we call the sarcomere. And sarcomeres, what, line up from one end of the muscle fiber all the way to the next. They're just repeating subunits. The ends of the sarcomere right here are what we call the Z line because they kind of look zigzagged. That's just an easy way to remember it. I think they're called the Z line because that's just the end point of a sarcomere. What's the last letter in the alphabet? Z. I think that's probably why they named it Z, not because it's zigzag. Okay, and the end of one sarcomere is what? The beginning of the next one. Right, so these are the endpoints of every sarcomere. Okay, and when you look underneath a microscope, you see a pattern that sort of looks like this. You see some dark zones and some light zones. Okay, and this dark zone right here is because of the dark of the big, large filaments, the myosin filaments. And these light zones right here are due to, that's where you only have these thin filaments or the actin filaments. Okay. All right, and what else do you see surrounding every myofibril? This yellow thing. That's the sarcoplasmic reticulum that, again, don't forget, that's storing calcium. You I have another picture. Okay, so what do I want you to know about a sarcomere? I want you to know what these, the endpoints of a sarcomere are called. What are these lines right here called? Those are the Z lines, right? I don't think I'm going to ask you to memorize what the A band is or this little M line in the middle. That would be easy. M line is just this middle line right here. Okay, but I do want you to know that between Z line and Z line is a sarcomere. And I want you to know these thick filaments and thin filaments. That's important to know. Okay. So how does muscle actually shorten? Yeah. Okay, it has something to do with the actin and myosin filaments. Let's look at this slide right here. Okay, so what are these lines right here, these vertical lines? Those are the Z lines once again. Which filament is attached to the Z line? Is it the myosin or the actin? Okay, so here's a thick one, that's the myosin. Here is the thin one, that's the actin. So the actin is actually attached to the Z lines. And the myosin are just kind of floating in between the actin, but they're held in place by these little dots, which are part of the M line right here. Okay, well, the question is, again, what is muscle specialized to do? It's specialized to contract, to get shorter. So a reasonable question would be, when a muscle contracts, that means that the Z lines are going to come together. A reasonable question would be, well, which one of these proteins, is it the myosin that gets shorter or is it the actin that gets shorter? Okay. Well, let's look at this illustration right here. And let's take a look and see. And, for instance, let me get a couple of markers right here. All right, so here is a muscle that's relaxed. Right, and let's look at the length of this myosin molecule. All right, and what is it? It's almost what, this length right here? Which is the cover to my marker. Okay, and now let's watch these Z lines. When the muscle contracts, what happens to the Z lines? Do they get farther apart? They stay the same distance, or do they get closer together? They're closer together. All right, so this is a contracted, this is the fully contracted state. Here's the relaxed state. And my marker right here shows pretty much the length of that myosin when it is relaxed. Let's look at the length of that myosin molecule when it's contracted. It looks what? From here to here, to me, it looks like it's the same length as from here to here. All right, so that myosin molecule really doesn't shorten at all. It stays the same length. All right, so it can't be the myosin molecule. Now let's look at the actin. Where's actin at? Ooh, it's really short. So I'm going to have to make a mark on my marker. Actin is here from the tip of my marker to about here. All right, so when the muscle contracts, let's go down. It is here and here is what I made a mark on my marker. Look at that length of actin. Did it get shorter? Okay, it's actually the same length. The length from here to here is the same as from here to here. And the myosin is what? From here to here when it's relaxed, which is the same length as here to here. So which one of those proteins shortens? When the sarcomere shortens. You know what? The correct answer is neither of them shorten. All right, so that was really kind of a trick question just to make you think about it. But why is it that sarcomere shortens? Well, let's look at these two markers right here. And let's pretend one's an actin and one's a myosin. All right, and we'll just say that the Z lines are on each end of the marker right here. How can we shorten that distance between the Z lines but yet keep these markers the same length? I can't shorten these markers at all because they're hard physical objects, but what can I do? I can actually have them slide over each other like that. Right? So now the sarcomere has shortened, but the proteins inside have stayed the same length. And then to get muscle back through its original length, when it relaxes, what happens? The filaments just slide back over each other like that. So this is what we call the sliding filament mechanism for muscle contraction, like this. So it's just not one molecule of myosin and one of actin. Okay, what's surrounding every molecule of myosin? If we look at a nice three-dimensional picture, like this one right here, we can see the thick filaments are the thick dots. And what's surrounding every thick dot right here? It's surrounded by actin. All right, and every actin is surrounded by myosin. So each one of these are surrounded by each other. So when they slide over each other, there's a lot of surface area. There's a lot of things to grab onto. So let me see if I can show you how things grab onto each other. All right, so now we'll really zoom in and just look at a couple myofilaments. All right, so here's a thick one. What are the thick ones called again?
Myosin.
And the thin ones are called the actin. All right, and these actins go all the way to the Z line that's going to be over here someplace. So these are the two kinds of filaments. But if we were to look really close at a myosin, we see that it has these arms coming off of it. We call these things cross bridges. And the cross bridges can, under the right conditions, reach up and grab hold of an actin molecule. And these cross bridges can articulate, like your finger. Okay, let's see if I can get my finger on the screen. What can your finger do? It can contract like that. All right, so the same thing with these cross bridges. They can move in this direction. All right, they can reach out, grab the actin molecule, and then articulate or bend. So the places on the actin right here where the cross bridges can attach when a muscle is relaxed or covered up, we call these the active sites on the actin filament. So there are a couple kinds of molecules on actin. Okay, troponin is this small molecule right here. And tropomyosin is this big, long one. And if you look underneath the tropomyosin molecule, can you see like a little dark area right here, and right here, and right here, and there's one right there? Those are the places where the myosin can grab and reach up and grab hold of the actin molecule. But when the muscles relax, guess what's covering up those spots? It is the tropomyosin is covering them up, right? So there can't be any association between myosin and actin. But with the proper signal, let's look and see what can happen. This is what really happens in muscle. Okay, so here is an actin filament. Here's myosin down over here. We see some cross bridges. And the cross bridges are going to, or will be able to attach to these little dark areas on the actin molecule. But in this case, it can't because they're covered up with tropomyosin. Here's a little troponin complex right here. All right, with the proper signal, calcium will be released into the myofibril. And so here I see calcium being added. Where did this calcium come from? What stores calcium in the muscle fiber? It's the sarcoplasmic reticulum, right? It's the smooth ER of a muscle fiber. It's released, and calcium binds to this little troponin molecule. And when it does, it pushes tropomyosin off of these little dark patches right here, which are the active sites where myosin can reach up and grab hold of the actin. All right, so when calcium is present, these cross bridges do what? They attach to an active site right here. So now myosin is attached to the actin molecule. And what happens? In order for muscle contraction to take place, you need energy. What's a typical kind of energy molecule in your body?
ATP.
It is ATP. What organelle makes ATP for you?
Mitochondria.
Mitochondria, right? So here is ATP. Right, from mitochondria, can attach itself to this head group right here. And when that happens,
oh, let's see if I can get my finger to bend the right way. Okay? So the myosin is going to attach to the actin, and then look what happens. It bends like that. So see this state down over here? The myosin cross bridge has bent, right? Is now kind of cocked. So what happens when the myosin head group moves? Or kind of, you can think of that as like a little flexion motion. It's going to pull, right, the actin over the surface of the myosin molecule. Or what's going to happen? They're going to slide over each other like that. So what's the signal for that? It's going to be that calcium ion. All right, now what provides the energy? The energy comes from ATP, right? So here's ATP. So after the cross bridge pulls on the actin filament, we call that the power stroke. Okay, then the cross bridge has to bind an ATP molecule. ATP is broken down into ADP and inorganic phosphate. And what does that do? That provides the energy for what to happen? For the cross bridge to extend again, reach out, and when it does, as long as there's still calcium present, it can grab hold of another binding site on the actin molecule. So this is how that whole muscle contraction cycle works. All right, so what should you know? Well, myosin has to attach itself to the actin molecule. And what's the signal that allows myosin to attach to actin? That's that calcium ion from the sarcoplasmic reticulum. And the myosin is actually going to change shape, right? It's going to, the cross bridge is going to flex and extend, right? The extension is caused by the hydrolysis of ATP. And this is going to just happen over and over and over again as long as that calcium signal is present and the mitochondria can make ATP. Okay. Well, what's the difference between step 4 over here and step 3? Who can maybe see the difference between step 3 and step 4, or step 4 and step 3? Okay. I see ATP is bound. Step 4, it's not bound over here. Okay. There's another real important difference. Oh, look at that. The attachment is different. In step 3 over here, the myosin is attached to the actin, but look over here. It is detached. And you know what detaches myosin from actin? It is the binding of ATP. That causes the detachment and also the extension of the cross bridge so that it can reach out and grab another active site in front of it. All right, so this is another way of saying this is that ATP is necessary to cause the detachment of actin and myosin from each other. And that explains something that you're probably all aware of, and that is when somebody dies, what happens to their ATP? It goes away, right, because the mitochondria can't make it. But what happens to somebody when they first die? What happens to their muscles? You would think that when they're dead and run out of ATP, that all their muscles should become very flaccid, right, and loose. But that's not what happens. What happens to somebody? Their muscles, yeah, contract. Their muscles all get really hard, even though there's no ATP in there. And that used to be really confusing to a lot of people all the time because you would think that you need ATP for muscle contraction. But what do you really need ATP for? The dissociation of myosin from actin. If there's no ATP, as soon as these cross bridges form, what happens? The muscle just stays contracted. So that's what happens. And that can, anybody know what that condition is called when there's no ATP? That's called rigor mortis, right? So rigor mortis can be explained by this step right here. Because ATP is necessary for what? Not the power stroke. It's for the dissociation of the actin and myosin, and also the resetting of this cross bridge from that flexed conformation to the extended conformation. That's when the muscles get stuck. Yeah. And then, of course, when somebody's dead for a longer period of time, then even the muscle proteins start to break down, and then their muscles become soft again. All right. Okay, so rigor mortis is caused by when the cell uses up all of its ATP, muscles get stuck in this condition right here. So on this slide, what's real important for you to know? Probably a couple things. The signal that causes what we call cycling of the cross bridges. Comes from the sarcoplasmic reticulum, which is a calcium signal. All right, and what causes the dissociation of myosin from actin and the power stroke is ATP. That's the energy source. And it's probably not so important that you know exactly how calcium works by binding to troponin and moving tropomyosin out of the way. But if you ever take a little bit more advanced class, you're going to have to be familiar with those molecules. Okay, ATP right here. Where does it come from, for instance? Is that what you want to know? It comes from mitochondria. So ATP is made by mitochondria all the time. So muscles need a lot of ATP to contract, so muscle fibers have a lot of mitochondria in them, as well as nuclei. And I'm going to show, actually I got a couple more slides where actually ATP comes from. We'll look at some metabolism today too. Okay. Alright, so I could ask you a question. What ion is very important for muscle contraction? And you'd say calcium, right? And what else do you know about calcium from the previous chapter? Where else do you have a lot of calcium? In your bones. Well, what do you think is more important? Having a lot of calcium in bones, so bones are strong, so they don't break. Or would you think it's maybe more important to have the proper level of calcium in muscle so that muscle can contract? If you had a choice, one or the other, where would you put calcium? Yeah, because your diaphragm is a muscle that has to contract in order for you to breathe, to inhale. And if that muscle doesn't have calcium, you can't breathe. Right? So as we all get older, guess what your body does? Does it make sure that you have nice strong bones with a lot of calcium? Or does your body make sure that you have well-functioning muscles that have calcium? Muscles are much more important, right, than bone. That's another reason, that's another way that we can explain, for instance, osteoporosis. Right? Because we need to have good calcium in our muscles to contract. So that's the important thing on that slide right there. All right, so this just shows you what? The myosin molecule and the actin molecules and the cross bridges. And don't forget these cross bridges, as long as there's a calcium signal, can reach up and grab the active site and pull on it, cause the filaments to slide past each other, and then ATP causes the release and the resetting. All right, and then that cycle can go over and over and over again. And that can produce a lot of tension in a muscle fiber. All right, so that's the importance of all those different filaments. So let's look at how muscle can be controlled. All right, I guess the other thing, just as a little synopsis, what's the best way to think of what model would you like to have in your mind that describes how a muscle contracts? What's the base, what's the structural and functional unit inside the muscle that you could describe how everything works inside of the muscle fiber? What's that repeating unit called again? The sarcomere. And how could you describe the location of a sarcomere? It's between what? It's between the Z lines, right? And the sarcomere is made up of those actin and myosin. And those two kinds of proteins, what do they do? Which one shortens? Neither. They do what? They slide over each other. And so that's what we call the sliding filament model for muscle contraction. Neither of those proteins actually shorten. Calcium is the signal, and ATP is the energy source for muscle contraction. Okay, so how does the cell know how to release calcium? Well, let's go back and look at this figure. Okay, so what we see right here is a muscle cell or a muscle fiber. This is not a whole muscle. This is just one cell. And don't forget, every cell is made up of these. These are myofibrils. These are the organelles that contract. And an organelle is what? Just an arrangement of sarcomeres from one end to the other. So here's a Z-line. Here's a Z-line right here. And what is surrounding every myofibril? Oh, they changed the color on us. Mitochondria kind of look yellow here to me. Right, so and there's why is there mitochondria everywhere inside this muscle cell? is making ATP for muscle contraction, right? Here's one nucleus here. Here's another one up over here. Okay, and in this diagram, the sarcoplasmic reticulum is this thing right here. So it used to be yellow on the other diagram. Now it is, what color is it? It looks pink. Okay, kind of pinkish. Right, and so there's, this is probably should be the same color right here. That's part of the sarcoplasmic reticulum. What's in that sarcoplasmic reticulum that's going to control the sliding of the filaments? Calcium ions. Lots of calcium ions. So when there's a signal from outside the cell, it's going to tell the sarcoplasmic reticulum to release a lot of calcium. And then calcium is going to go from that sarcoplasmic reticulum where? Everywhere inside the myofibril. And it's going to cause the cycling of those cross bridges. All right, so let's work backwards. The signal for causing the release of calcium is an electrical signal. That electrical signal comes from the surface of the muscle cell. So how does it get down and surround all these myofibrils? Look at all these little holes in the membrane right here. These are openings to something that we call a transverse tubule. So don't forget, longitudinal direction is along the long axis of this fiber. Transverse is what? Like making a cross section of this muscle fiber. And look at these tubules right here. They are what, along the longitudinal axis or the transverse axis? Transverse, right? So we call these T-tubules. And I see one here, and one here, one here, and one here. And these are continuous with the sarcolemma. Remember, the sarcolemma is the cell membrane of a cell. So when there is an electrical signal on the cell membrane, it enters the T-tubule, and it goes where? Deep inside the cell. And that electrical signal then causes the release of calcium from the sarcoplasmic reticulum. So if you have a T-tubule, so what's the job of a T-tubule? It takes the electrical signal from the cell membrane or sarcolemma deep inside the cell. And that electrical signal in the T-tubule is going to cause the release of calcium in the sarcoplasmic reticulum, which then causes what? The sliding of the myofilaments past each other. So this connection right here, which is two parts of a sarcoplasmic reticulum and one part of a T-tubule, we call that a triad sometimes. I don't think this is an exam figure, but this would be a really good exam figure maybe for the next semester, okay, because it's nice anatomy. And it shows you a lot about how the muscle contracts. So we got the T-tubule right here, sarcoplasmic reticulum, that causes what? The sliding of myosin over actin. The Z-lines are going to come together, but not just one sarcomere, what? Thousands of sarcomeres in the whole muscle. So the whole muscle is going to shorten. Okay, now we're going to go back one more step. Where does that electrical signal come from on the surface of a muscle? Well, the electrical signal is going to come from the kind of tissue that's going to signal this muscle to contract. And what can you tell me about skeletal muscle? Under what kind of control is it? How is it controlled? It's voluntary, right? With your conscious thought. It shouldn't just contract automatically. So there's a part in your brain, the frontal lobe, that controls skeletal muscle. As a matter of fact, don't forget, skeletal muscle is the only kind of tissue that you really have voluntary control over. So signals are going to come down a nerve. We call this a motor neuron, as an electrical signal. But that electrical signal can't directly stimulate the muscle. There is something right here that we call, well, there's a space between the nerve and the muscle. We call that the synapse. All right, so a synapse is a way for different cells, neighboring cells, to communicate with each other. And electricity can't go through the synapse. It has to be converted to another kind of signal. So there are things in little vesicles. You see these synaptic vesicles here and here, and those little dots? Those little dots are chemicals that are released into the synapse, and when they are released into the synapse, they go to the muscle cell and start up the electrical signal again. And that electrical signal flows over the whole muscle cell. And how does that electrical signal get into deep inside the myofibrils again? What's the pathway? Yeah, that T-tubule. Okay, so this thing right here is what we call the neuromuscular junction. So this is a kind of chemical synapse that's in your body. And those little dots inside there, these are what we call neurotransmitters. These are neurotransmitters. So that chemical has to move across the synapse and stimulate another electrical signal in the muscle cell. And when it flows over everything, it's going to what? Release calcium and cause the sliding of the myofilaments. Okay, this slide I'm not going to talk about. Isotonic versus isometric contraction. That's kind of interesting. So I'm not going to test you on that one either. If you're an athlete, you'll want to know about that one. Definitely know about that one. I don't think I'm going to ask you this. We'll have to look at the questions at the end of the book. Okay, but let's take a look at it anyway. Here we see one nerve fiber. And what can you tell me about this one nerve fiber? Does it just go to one muscle fiber?
No.
It actually has branches on it. And this particular motor fiber goes to what? 1, 2, 3 different muscle fibers. And so whenever there's an electrical signal on this motor neuron, guess how many muscle fibers contract in this group right here? You're right. It's only 3, which is going to be kind of a weak contraction. So if we wanted the muscle to contract stronger, what would we have to do? We need to stimulate more nerves that are going to this muscle to get more muscle fibers to contract. So this thing right here, the one motor neuron and the 3 muscle fibers that it innervates is what we call a motor unit. Some muscles have really small motor units like this. So this is 3 muscle fibers. This is for very fine control, like in your hands and maybe your lips for articulation. But other muscles, for instance, there might be one motor neuron innervating 100 or 1,000 different muscle fibers. So what part of your body don't you need to have a lot of dexterity in? Like for finger movement and for articulation. What part of your body don't you use a lot in a lot of different ways? Like for instance, your back muscles. Okay? You don't really have to have very precise control of your back, all right? Because you're not writing, you're not speaking. So in that part of your body, the motor units are very, very large. In other parts of the body where you need to have very fine discriminative control, motor units are very small. Okay. On this slide, what else do you see? What is this pattern? What do we call this pattern again? All these stripes. It's a characteristic of skeletal muscle. These are what we call striations, right? So skeletal muscle is voluntary. A fiber is the same thing as a muscle. How many nuclei do we have in a fiber? Many, right? And that's because this fiber was many cells at one time. And all these striations line up. And how would you explain to somebody, why do you see these striations? What's inside of a muscle fiber that gives you that perception of striations? What's the repeating unit again called? That's the sarcomere, right? So each one of these is a sarcomere. So about from maybe here to here is a sarcomere, and then from here to here is another one, and then from here to here is another one. And they all line up to give muscle, skeletal muscle, that striated appearance. Okay, let's talk about muscle energetics. What does muscle need to contract besides calcium again? The calcium, don't forget, is just a signal. You need ATP. All right, so ATP is required. There is energy in ATP, and it can be released when ATP is hydrolyzed, when it's broken down. When ATP is broken down, what is produced? ADP and inorganic phosphate. Plus, don't forget, when you break ATP down, this is the whole purpose, what else is released? Energy. And the muscle cells know how to use that energy for contraction, right? To get those cross bridges. cycling. Thank you so much. All right, so what is the organelle inside your body that makes most of the ATP? That's mitochondria. So, I didn't draw this for you on your handout. Okay, so you're going to have to draw it in. So this oval right here sort of represents a mitochondria. All right, so what's the job of this mitochondria again is to make ATP. We see that over here. But it also produces some other things in this process when it's making ATP. It's going to produce CO2. That's a gas. And is it okay if we let CO2 build up in our body?
No.
How do we get rid of it?
Breathe out.
Yeah, we just breathe it out. We exhale it out of our body. Okay? So where does that CO2 come from that we're breathing out of our body? The mitochondria right here, when the mitochondria is making ATP. Another molecule that's made in this process is water. All right? And what can you tell me about water? Is it good or bad? Well, it's really good because that's the solvent that your body is dissolved in. And kind of amazing that it's produced by this metabolism inside your cell. All right, so in order for mitochondria to make ATP and byproducts CO2 and water, it needs some things. What does it need? It needs energy. It needs a fuel molecule because that energy and the fuel is going to end up in ATP. That's going to end up in the ATP. And it, of course, needs ADP and inorganic phosphate to put together to make ATP. And it's got fuel. It needs one other molecule. It needs oxygen. And where does your body get oxygen from? That's what you breathe in every time you take a breath. There's oxygen in the air, and we breathe it in our bodies, and it's distributed to mitochondria, so mitochondria can make ATP. So if there's no oxygen, guess what happens to this ATP that's made by mitochondria? It stops. What happens when a cell stops making ATP? Well, it dies, right? So everything inside your body really is dependent on oxygen getting to these mitochondria. Okay, this fuel molecule. Okay, these fuel molecules are things that you have to have in your diet. You have to eat these things. So what are a couple of good fuel molecules for mitochondria? Can be glucose, that's a sugar, or it could be a fatty acid, that's a lipid. All right, so fatty acids and glucose can be used to make ATP in your cells by what kind of organelle? Mitochondria. Right. So that's a pretty good slide to take a look at. All right, so that is kind of a short form, but you know what? There are actually two ways that your body can make ATP. There's something called aerobic respiration and something called anaerobic respiration. And aerobic is a molecule that's necessary. Guess what molecule is necessary for aerobic respiration? That would be oxygen. And anaerobic means what? Without oxygen. Okay, so let's compare and contrast these two different kinds of metabolism. And actually, this is what we call cellular respiration. And I want you to be able to tell me before we go today, what is the purpose of cellular respiration? As a matter of fact, you're right. It is to make ATP. I wasn't going to tell you right away, but it's to make ATP. Right? You got two kinds. Aerobic requires oxygen, and you already know what organelle is responsible for that production of ATP. It is the mitochondria. And what do mitochondria need? That's on the previous slide. You need fuel like glucose and fatty acids. What else do you need? You got to have oxygen for them to work. All right. Oh, it's going to produce water. You don't need water necessarily. But you also need what the precursors for ATP, which are ADP and inorganic phosphate, to be put together. And what are the products of aerobic respiration? You got ATP, you got that CO2 again, and it also produces water. Okay, but how many ATPs? Okay, now that's for every one glucose molecule. It can produce as many as 38 ATPs. That's a pretty good number. Okay, so here are the products of aerobic respiration, but if you're going to pick one of these products as the most important one, what would you say is the most important one? Is the purpose of cellular respiration to make CO2? No. To make water? No. Is to make ATP, right? To keep you alive. Okay. Let's contrast that with anaerobic respiration. It is not located in the mitochondria. It's a process that happens in the cytoplasm. Right? So it does not need an organelle. There are just enzymes in the cytoplasm that can make some ATP. The substrate for anaerobic respiration is only glucose, not fatty acids, right? Only that sugar. And here are the products of anaerobic respiration. Well, it makes ATP because that's a function of cellular respiration to make ATP. And it also makes two lactic acids or two lactate molecules. So lactate and lactic acid are exactly the same compound, right? It's just different language. All right, but now let's contrast these a little bit. Which respiration makes more ATP for every glucose molecule? Is it aerobic or anaerobic? Aerobic, because anaerobic only makes how many ATP? Only two. Pretty miserable amount for an organ that is requires a lot of energy, like your heart and your brain. These two ATP are not enough to keep it alive. But for some muscles under certain conditions, that might be enough to keep a muscle alive. And so that's why we have this process right here, anaerobic respiration for some kinds of tissues. Okay, and I think, did I give you the gas station analogy or word problem? I think I did. Did I do that? To kind of contrast aerobic versus anaerobic respiration? I didn't do that. Okay. Let's say you need gas in your car before you go home tonight, and you got a choice of two gas stations. Gas station A and B. I didn't do this? Yeah, I think I did, right? All right, and it's the same, what, $5 per gallon? No matter what gas station you go to. But gas station A, you get 2 miles per gallon. Gas station B, you get 38 miles per gallon. Okay, what gas station are you going to go to? All right, gas station B, right? So, if you were going to design a body, like your body, would you, okay, design it to operate with aerobic respiration or anaerobic respiration? Aerobic respiration, right, generates a whole lot more energy for what? Every glucose molecule. All right, so those are the important things for you to know about, okay, in terms of muscle. This slide, right? Oh, you should also know where they take place. Aerobic is mitochondria, requires oxygen. Anaerobic is just in the cytoplasm. And I'm not going to ask you to know the metabolic pathways for those things, but hopefully you'll take a class sometime and you get to look at those things because they're actually very interesting to know about. Muscle fatigue, I'm not going to talk about, or oxygen debt in here, so I won't have questions on the test for those things. But, you know, if you contract a muscle a lot, right, in a period of just a couple minutes, does it get stronger or weaker? Okay, it gets stronger if you do it, right, day to day, week to week, month to month, it gets stronger. But if you just do it over a short period of time, what happens? It gets weaker, and that the weakness is what we call fatigue. And that's the result of because you're using up ATP. And you're also increasing lactic acid that produces fatigue. I'm not going to test you on that kind of stuff. And you could probably tell me, all right, what does a buildup of lactic acid in a muscle feel like? Yeah, it burns, right? So every time you contract a muscle, it turns in from a soft tissue to what? Really hard. It's a solid, right? And when a muscle turns into a solid, blood can't flow into it because it's turned into a solid. It's contracting. It's forcing blood out of the muscle. So if blood can't get into a muscle, how's it generating ATP? Aerobic or anaerobic respiration? Anaerobic respiration. And remember, that's one of the products of anaerobic respiration is lactic acid. And that's what produces fatigue, but also what? Discomfort. And you probably had a muscle that had a cramp for whatever reason. How does that feel? So if you're walking down the street and then all of a sudden a muscle in your leg contracts, goes into a contraction, do you like pull up your pants and say, oh, look at that big strong muscle, you're really proud, you want to show it off? Or what are you doing when you get a cramp? Oh, you just kind of go, okay, relax, you do different things, you try to make that muscle just relax as soon as possible because it's really painful. Okay. So muscle contraction, whether it's a skeletal muscle, when it can't get oxygen and it's contracting, is very painful. And it's the same experience when somebody's having a heart attack. Because can your heart ever relax? It's always got to be contracting. And what does it need when it's contracting? It needs ATP, right? And when blood supply is cut off to the heart, all right, it's extremely painful, just like when you have a muscle cramp in another part of your body. So when you get a muscle cramp, how does it feel? Yeah, I say it hurts like hell. Okay, it hurts like hell, and you wish it to go away. When you have a heart attack, okay, how does that feel? That hurts like hell, right? Because that muscle is producing all that lactic acid. As a matter of fact, when people, a fair number of people get a heart attack, the pain is so bad, they're sure they're going to die, and they just give up and die. Okay, even though they might not die physiologically, that's how painful it is. Okay, so if you're ever having a heart attack, you should do what? Relax and call a paramedic and get to the hospital as soon as possible. Okay, you're not necessarily going to die, but you got to get it attended to. I'm sorry? Because a number of different mechanisms, but one of the things that can produce a heart attack is a blood clot. Okay, and aspirin will prevent blood from clotting. It will reduce your clotting function. And sometimes it can even reverse a clot that's formed. But there are some other inflammatory processes that happen within a blood vessel within the heart, and aspirin reverses those inflammatory processes as well. But probably the most important thing is that it prevents a further buildup of a blood clot. And a blood clot is going to block a vessel that's taking blood to the heart. Okay, and that blood is bringing what to the heart? Oxygen for ATP production. Okay, and when a muscle is contracting, those blood vessels don't operate. So any kind of spasm in a muscle is going to hurt like hell, right? So let's see. A couple other conditions. For instance, when somebody has a tonic contraction of the uterus, right? When the uterus is contracted, right? How does that feel? Hurts like hell. Okay, I wouldn't know about that, but I can imagine because I've had a muscle cramp in another part of my body, right? It's the same kind of physiologic response right there. There's another condition that's really unfortunate. It's a congenital condition. People inherit that from their parents, and it's called sickle cell anemia. And it's not due to muscle contraction, right? But sickle cell anemia is when somebody's making red blood cells that can't carry oxygen to their body. So how does a muscle feel again when it's not getting oxygen? Hurts like hell, right? So when somebody has sickle cell anemia, their blood is not carrying oxygen to all over their body. How does their whole body feel? Hurts like hell. It's really terrible. Yeah, you know, it's really kind of a terrible circumstance, right, when somebody has in a sickle cell crisis because their body feels like it has a muscle cramp everywhere. And so when somebody's in terrible pain, what do we like to give people that are in terrible, excruciating pain? Yeah, opiates, for instance, right? So a lot of times when you see patients over and over and over again in a clinical setting that are requesting opiates for pain, you kind of wonder if they're drug seekers, right? And drug seekers can be dangerous to you. You don't ever really know what they're going to do, if they're going to hurt you or, you know, just steal drugs or whatever. But don't forget, a lot of people need opiates to treat their medical condition. For instance, like somebody that's in sickle cell crisis repeatedly, right? Make sure that if you're ever in a clinical situation, don't treat them like a drug-dependent person or a drug seeker. They're just somebody that has, what, a physiological need and a right to have pain medication, right? So you gotta be, huh? Yeah, they get addicted to it, but addiction in that case would be better than feeling that muscle cramp all over their body. You can't just let people with that kind of pain, yeah, live untreated, right? That's unethical to do that. Difficult treatment, fluids, and sometimes transfusions.
Hopefully there'll be a cure for that disease sometime with genetic engineering, but it can be complicated. Yeah, it can be really complicated. So we're not quite done with the muscle system, so we'll finish up next time with some muscle anatomy. So I'm going to do what? Start here. And you know what? We might have a quiz on muscles this week too. I didn't check the syllabus, but check yours and work with the questions in the study guide. Okay.